Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's BudPod 145.
145. Time to thrive. And... time to strive.
Yes.
For it is New Year.
Ah.
New Year, new pod.
New Year, new pod. Bud Pod slimming down.
Yes.
How would we slim down? We use fewer fat words. I don't know.
Yeah, fewer vowels. We're only going to use consonants from now on.
Hard, firm consonants.
Mm-hmm. We're going on the consonant diet for the podcast. It should real slim the podcast right down. It should half the play times.
Yep.
Thin pod.
Thin pod. Do you have any New Year's resolution, Philippe?
Yeah, my New Year's resolution is to be more organized, less distracted, and I'm getting there. I became too addicted to online chess, too addicted, and I'm easing it out. I'm closing off all the games that I've got going with people like yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm sending out the message on the chat function on the chess app saying, I'd just like to tell you that this will be my last game for a while, just so people don't take it personally when I don't respond to their challenge afterwards. So I'm just finishing off, tying up the loose ends, finishing off the games, and I'm just taking a break from it. I'm just trying to remove all the dopamine delivery systems that I've gotten addicted to. I've taken a couple of social media apps off my phone.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I'm just trying to fucking focus, baby. I'm trying to stick to a task at a time. What I've started doing is I've started like starting a job. Then when it starts to get tough, I drop it and start another job. And in the end, you just waste time. So I'm not trying to. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to focus on jobs and get one job done, then move on to the next job.
One job at a time.
Focus. Focus is my New Year's resolution.
Okay.
How about you?
Well, I have. First of all, I have questions. I have questions, Phil.
Oh. Yeah.
I have inquiries. First of all, I would like to say how amazingly sinister it would be if I was playing chess with someone who I didn't know and they said, this may be my last game for some time. My first thought would be that you were dying, and my second thought would be prison or like running away or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to go hide from the chess mafia.
Yes. Yeah, they're
a big prison, like a big bishop.
They've got me in check, and I need to keep moving before they mate me. What? And second, so my, that was a comment, and this is my question. What sign or signal did you receive from yourself, the world, that made you stop and think, this is too much chess now? What changed? Because you've been dancing with chess for a while now. I'm going to try and talk about it as if it's a drug.
Yeah.
Dabbling. That's what I mean. You've been dabbling. You've been playing chess in alleyways with strangers, things like that.
Yeah. Reusing dirty chess boards, which you really shouldn't do. Buying street chess, buying chess cut, chess sets cut with checker pieces.
Yeah,
Pierre.
Oh,
you know when you have to pretend that checker flat checker piece is a rook. No.
It's then, a low moment.
That's bad. That's not good for your system. I think it was just an accumulative realization that it was using up a lot of my time. The realization was that how much my mood was affected by chess, because I'm not a very competitive person, but I value my intellect very highly. And so if I lose at something which has a bearing on my intellect, that it sends me down a spiral of self-hatred, which is just like a knock-on to the rest of my day. Because then I feel like, why should I even bother writing a script if I'm dumb enough to get mated on the back rank?
There's nothing nothing worse to be mated on the bank, being mated on the back rank.
You feel like a stupid little monkey when you get mated on the back rank. Basically, for people who don't play chess, that's essentially when you get mated just simply with a rook because you've left your king unprotected at the back, but also behind a wall of pawns you can't get past.
Yeah,
and all you have to do is move a pawn and you have an escape route. But so when you get mated like that, it feels like someone's opened up your asshole and put inside a toilet brush. And it's just like
in a bad
thrusting
way.
It up and down.
In a bad
way. In a bad way. Sorry, it's like a dirty brush.
Yeah.
So then after losing game of chess, I'd be like, I'm stupid. I'm still a piece of shit. I should just lie down and die. Why should I even bother trying to do anything else? And then I'd have to go, well, I can continue with my day if I recover enough self-esteem by eventually winning a game of chess. So then, and this is like, it's a gambler's fallacy, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the same cognitive device that this thing is playing off of. And so I would just then keep playing games until I would eventually win. And by the time I eventually won, it could have been an hour and a half that I'd lost.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just sort of thinking like, well, I lost that game of chess because I was only half concentrating on it or I was unlucky. But now I'm going to put the weight of my whole day on this next game. And so the stress of that and feeling kind of hot and upset, that will make me play even better. Now that I feel hot and I feel like I'm in a rush, I'll be even smarter now.
It's the emotional equivalent of like going all in, putting your house on the next hand of cards, like just putting your entire self-worth onto the next game because you're saying to yourself, I'm putting everything into this one.
I think I remember it might have been Norm Macdonald talking about gambling addiction because, you know, he lost everything several times. And he was saying something about how someone asked him, like, well, why do you go broke? Why don't you just lose $500,000 and still have $500,000 out of your million, you know? And he said there is something about reaching zero that's a huge relief.
Because then
it can't get any lower than that and you're done and you can finally stop and it's not a question anymore.
Yeah. And the decision's been made for you. You have to stop now.
Yeah, exactly.
You literally can't keep going.
Whereas I find that I resign quite early in some chess games because I'm losing and I'm bored of the puzzle. I'm bored of it because it's been like days.
Right.
And it's not like a new board. It's just like, this old stuck bishop again. And you just go, I'm bored of this game in particular and it's not going well. And I don't think I can summon the energy to keep playing at all, never mind so much energy that I can somehow turn this around like some sort of amazing coup. I just kind of go, and it sort of, if you imagine like if Barney Gumble was playing chess on his phone and he just kind of let it collapse out of his flopping hand. Like that, like that rose in the gutter in his film.
Yeah.
That's how I...
Don't cry for me. I'm already dead.
That's how I give up on chess games. So. I know what you mean, though, because it's hard to explain because if you're listening to this and you think we sound ill, we might very well be ill, but in our defense, listeners, our jobs require us to have the optimistic creative energy to write a big long script or a big proposal or a load of jokes, hundreds of jokes, completely without payment in advance or any kind of promise that anything will ever happen with it. So we're not getting paid to do it.
And
no one's asked us to do it.
That's right. And most fatally, in private.
Yes.
We have complete privacy. We don't have a boss or even a room of colleagues to be looking over our shoulder. We can look at any, we can watch fucking porn during our work time if you want, and no one's going to catch us. No one.
And if they caught us, they wouldn't care. There would be no consequences, and no one would care, because no one inherently wants what we're making. It would be like walking into the town square and just screaming suddenly at all the townsfolk who don't know who you are. Well, there won't be any more rice pudding this weekend. No one knew you were doing it. No one wanted any. You were on your own in your flat just stirring rice pudding and you got angry with it. And the lack of you producing it and putting it out into the world, it changes nothing for anyone else. It doesn't matter. Whereas if, at least if you're like an accountant or something, you have clients, there's companies, you've got to file things, taxes, there's consequences, you could go to prison if you fuck it up, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You and me are just sat in a room. I think lockdown and everyone having to work from home has given people an unprecedented level of empathy with freelance creatives like you and me.
Yeah, so at long last, finally a little understanding.
All these people suddenly going, God, it's so hard to do anything when it doesn't matter when you get up and no one really checks in on you. And it's like, yes, exactly.
Thank you, yeah. Yes, that's why I haven't won an Oscar yet. I've been trying to tell you guys how hard it is.
That's why comedians go weird, because it's just you're in this, like, you're free floating in like a saltwater tank, you know, you're not attached to anything. Oh.
Yes, just occasionally twitching like some scientists are doing an experiment on you with tubes coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, with a big mask with a tube coming out.
Yeah.
All there's hundreds of comedians in a row in these lit up tubes and a guy in a lab coat saying, you know, take a look at my collection.
Do you ever find yourself in the mental or emotional state where you're watching a sci-fi movie like that? Like, I don't know, Minority Report or whatever, or The Matrix, and they're just human beings hooked up in a jelly solution in a tank with tubes coming out of them, and they're just sort of floating there in suspended animation, and you just think, oh, that'd be lovely right now. I'd love a bit of that. That looks brilliant.
Just for a weekend.
How do I sign up for the jelly tank? Yeah, how long can I be in the jelly tank for? Do any scientists need a guy to be in a jelly tank for a bit? I'll sign the waivers. I'll sign whatever you need so they can't arrest you.
If it sweetens the deal, if someone who's not supposed to be looking at my jelly tank taps on the lid, I can suddenly open my eyes in a frightening way. would that help you? Let me in the sweet tank. Yeah.
Let me in.
That would be. I really hope that that's the new Matrix film. It's just millions of those humans all dressed in like cyberpunk gear, just hammering on the roof of those tanks, going, "This is shit. Let me back in. Let me in the tank. I want to go back to bed. I don't want to have a rave in a cave anymore with Morpheus. I don't want it. It's cold and I have to hand weave all my clothes from some sort of Hessian. It's no good. It's fucking shit out here. There's no sun. There's literally no sun.
Chess addiction is on the rise in the UK. This year, 17,100 men will lose their entire afternoon playing consecutive 5-minute blitz games on their phone standing up in the kitchen. Jebethy is one such man. We have distorted his voice to protect you from hearing his shit voice.
It started off as just a fun little distraction, a quick game of chess between posting memes on the Doctor Who subreddit. But soon I became addicted, losing 100 chess games in a day, only to go to bed swearing into my pillow, having not had a shower. All I thought about all day was chess, playing chess, and losing chess, and where the next chess game was going to come from. It was the last thing I needed in my life. I mean, my name's already Jebethy.
But with your help, we here at Checkmate can help young men like Jebethy. With a donation of only £18,000 a month, we can find Jebethy a less addictive and more socially acceptable pastime than online chess, like crack cocaine or flashing strangers in the park.
With Trackmate's help, I can finally live a normal life again, doing what I really love, painting small figurines of Animorphs mid-transformation. Do you remember Animorphs? They were a book series about teenagers who could change into animals. On the front was like a sort of like illustration of a teenage boy turning into a salamander or something. I paint figurines of the middle bit, the half boy, half salamander point in the transformation. I literally can't stop painting these things. And it's all because of Checkmate's help.
And your help. Together, we can help men like Jebethy. Together, we can say checkmate to chess addiction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Maybe you should do an immersion tank, you know, the salt water.
The floaty tanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be your dream.
I've had a couple of MRIs, which are the closest experience to that, I think. And it's really scary going into an MRI because you're going in there for 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Or an hour and a quarter. And you can't come out. And you have to stay still and just have kind of you can listen to the radio, but you mainly just have your thoughts. And you know, you go through a lot and you think about a lot of stuff, and it's not bad. It's quite pleasant.
Yeah. See, I've done
not, it's like a little holiday.
I've done that, but not for as long. But I always find it odd when people are like, oh, it's so terrifying, and I sort of think, well. Yeah, it's a nice little break. That's what meditation is. Oh, we should become like Jerry Seinfeld and David Lynch are transcendental meditation enthusiasts, Phil. Did you know that?
Yes, I think I did.
Maybe we can become weird like arts industry meditation hippies. That could be our way out of this chess hellhole we find ourselves in.
What is the transcendental part of transcendental meditation? What are you transcending?
I think you're trying to transcend our current plane of existence or something, to be above it, through it. I'm not sure.
And it's only when you're above it and through it that you can make observations.
I think
about
so.
waiters at coffee shops. To the degree that, to the level of Jerry Seinfeld.
Look, before
he can make the observations he has made because he's lifted off the ground and looked down on the earth and his body.
He's literally
been able to.
Yeah, he's observing.
What is the deal with ice cream? And his sort of mind spirits flies down to an ice cream store, and he just sort of floats there like a ghost of Christmas past, and he just like, looks around taking notes. Yeah, maybe that's how he does it. That's how he writes his stand-up.
Absolutely, yeah. And it, you know, he suddenly wakes up and he quickly writes down, it's ice cold, but some people chew it. He quickly writes that down. Who are these people who chew their ice cream?
Who are these people?
You're chewing. It's too cold.
That's why he does a sort of slightly shouty bit, because he's trying. He still thinks he's in the meditation dimension, and he has to shout through the membrane of consciousness to the people in the living world. Yeah. Why do people do it? He's trying to shoot. He does sound a bit like a ghost. Maybe that's why.
Yes. I would love to be offered a red or a blue pill to leave the Matrix by Jerry. Sure, you could take the blue pill. It would all go away. He's doing it like that, like you're an idiot for not taking it.
God, he's so rich. I want to be that rich. Please, make me that rich.
He's richer than Mitt Romney, and Mitt Romney's sinisterly rich.
May I remind all the podballs to please join our Patreon. I think it should get us there eventually. A couple more tat whisperers, and I think we'll be there.
Definitely, yeah. Then we'll be able to meditate all we want. We'll be so in touch with ourselves. I'm just trying to. I just looked up the history of transcendental meditation, and like so many interesting hippie things, it just was invented, or some guy kind of came up with it in the 50s.
Yeah, all this shit is surprisingly young. Like yoga is very young. Yoga is maybe is it like is even a century old? Yoga?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
it's not some ancient practice. It's a very recent invention. Yoga. Relatively speaking.
Yes, modern yoga, early modern yoga. Yeah, 19th century?
Oh, right.
I don't really know. But it's like a spiritual practice, I think, rather than... Yeah, it's all the druid stuff. It was made up in the 50s, really. All that Aleister Crowley, Stonehenge shit.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, well, something about the 50s, everyone just sort of went, well...
But the druids really existed, all that stuff.
The druids did exist, but like when people are like, oh, the druids were like this, and that's why the Celts were like this, and they're like describing events that were like 900 years apart or more, like...
Speaking of, Pierre, for Christmas I got a copy of the book The English and the History.
Ooh, is this the one you sent me that photo of?
Yes, by Robert Toombs, and it's a thick boy, THICCBOI, a thick boy of a book. It's so long. I think all in all, is with indexes and everything, it's like 1,000 pages. But I'm slowly getting through the first chapter, and it's great. I love English history. I'm learning so much. I'm plugging so much of the gaps in my knowledge. Like just a basic shit that I never learned because I didn't do history here.
What was the
I
best
study history here?
What was the best plugs you found so far? Anything?
The best plugs is like it was Romans and then Anglo-Saxons.
Yes.
Which doesn't really compute in my. You always think of Romans were quite recent because of how modern they were. But they were before the Anglo-Saxons. The Anglo-Saxons came after them, which I didn't know.
That's the thing that people leave out, because they just sort of, everyone just goes, Rome, boopidoo, William the Conqueror.
Yeah.
That's what...
Yep.
I said that's why I was interested to do the degree I did, because they would just go like, and the Romans conquered the British, and they kind of became Romano-British. A bit of a synergy there, and then the Romans had to leave. And then 900 years later, well, 700 years later, some Normans conquered some Anglo-Saxons. You go, well, what the... Neither of those people were mentioned just now.
Yeah, and I've just got to William the Conqueror in 1066, and all that I didn't know anything about, and now I've plugged that very large gap in my knowledge. It's good stuff, and... And like Harold II, who lost to William the Conqueror, was the last ever Anglo-Saxon king, and all that sort of stuff. I didn't know. These were just sort of load of white guy names floating about. So William is different from Harold. He's from a different place. Where is he from?
Yeah.
And just how much like flitting between France and here there were people just jumping between here and France all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone just kind of got all mixed up together.
Yeah, that's
it's good stuff.
That's the thing. Soon you'll be able to tell a Norman name from an Anglo-Saxon name.
Yes, 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 yes.
A vital
skill.
Well,
Harold's a Danish name, I think. Do you know the Vikings? Over the entire period of the Vikings, the influx of population to England was possibly the largest influx of a population until the 20th century.
Yeah,
it was like the largest change of population until the 20th century.
That sounds about right, because I mean, after all the sort of Norse settlements and stuff and the Dane law and so on, all that really happened was a few Huguenots, Flemish weavers kind of got stuck in London and South Wales.
Phlegm will get stuck. That's how I remember that the Flemish got stuck in London. Is that the phlegm gets stuck?
That's because you've always thought of London as England's throat, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, it is.
You've always said that.
It's the bit that sort of spits on the rest of the world
and eats
and swallows up
everything.
All the goodies. Yum, 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 yum. All the Chinese and Russian investment. Yum, 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 yum.
That's not a bad metaphor. London has this horrible old big mouth.
I've just had quite an English history couple of days. On New Year's Day, me and my girlfriend, on a whim, went to a National Trust property, because that's the age I'm at now.
Very
that's
nice.
The kind of thing I do on a whim. But it wasn't just any National Trust property, Pierre. It was Sutton Hoo in Suffolk.
You went to Sutton Hoo?
Sutton Hoo
you
went to
it.
Sutton Hoo? I did. I went to Sutton Hoo.
The spiritual home of the study of the Anglo-Saxons.
Yeah, and made famous by the recent Netflix movie The Dig.
Yes, Ralph Fiennes.
It's a very fun movie. Yeah, so the Sutton Hoo is where this incredible discovery was made in the 30s. Right before the start of the Second World War, they discovered Raedwald, Anglo-Saxon king of East Anglia, buried with his enormous ship just in the middle of a field in Suffolk.
Yep, yep.
And all these incredible gold artifacts and beautiful things that the Anglo-Saxons had, and it changed how we thought about Anglo-Saxons. We realized they were a civilization with rituals and artifacts and craftspeople. And trade, there were things they found there from Byzantine. There were a couple of things there from Sri Lanka originally. It's mad.
It's fucking crazy, isn't it? How everyone sort of says like, oh, well, the world's become more globalized. And it's like, well, stuff always traveled a long way. It's just that it's faster now.
Yeah, you also always think about, and I guess it's a kind of thing that modern nationalists, especially white English nationalists, you know, they like to think of the Anglo-Saxons and the old English race as this insular, self-dependent race that didn't have anything to do with the rest of the world. But they were trading with Sri Lanka. You know, they were going all the way down to the Middle East, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we've always been a global nation.
Gleefully. And like, there was no concept of nation. You were just a guy who can talk to some other guys more easily than some other guys. There were peoples,
yeah.
But this whole nation, I mean, it's such a shame because so much of the study of that period is marred by that kind of nonsense politics. And then you end up with like the Anglo-Saxon Journal, which is just like a purely academic journal, having to like, you know, release a statement saying, please don't post on our fucking Facebook wall about a bunch of fucking Nazi conspiracy theory stuff. Or it's very hard to you need to look very quiet and nice and nerdy to get away with being a scholar of runes, Phil.
Yeah, yeah. if a muscly guy said he's really into runes,
yeah.
I'd rune the other way, Pierre. That's where I'd rune. I'd rune in the opposite direction. He's got some Nazi thing.
Good,
he's got going on for sure.
I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd rune away, and then you'd hit a big drum on stage. Burp, blow a little horn. Yeah, you can't look anything like a biker. You'd have to look the opposite.
Highly recommend this Sutton Hoo National Trust property. It's great. There's a great little museum nearby where they have a couple of the artifacts, mm-hmm. some really cool bits and pieces. And they have the best bit of the whole museum, a self-produced historical video from the time of an old Anglo-Saxon lady talking to a young Anglo-Saxon girl
yep.
who are cleaning up King Raedwald's jewels for his burial. And sort of it's the equivalent of an intergenerational fight, but in Anglo-Saxon days. And the young girl's going, "The Frankish trader told me about a new Christ God. When I die, I will go to the Christ God." And the older woman goes, "You shame your true gods." It's great stuff. It's real kitchen sink drama, but
yeah,
over King Raedwald's silver helmet.
It's always difficult to make something informative with when all the dialogue has to be like, you know, "Well, let's hope that that Mr. Hitler who was recently elected in Germany will..." As if like that's how we all talk all the time. Like, just standing around going like, "Well, now that COVID's over and the Taliban have taken Kabul, then perhaps we shall, you know."
Yeah. yes.
Everyone talking really like fucking NPCs standing on street corners talking to anyone who walks by.
Also, the way the younger girl kept talking about the Frankish trader made me think, she's definitely fucking the Frankish trader. I felt like that was the subtext of the whole 5 minute long film.
Yeah, at the one point, Frankish trader this and Frankish trader that. Why don't you just marry the Frankish trader and his Christ God if you love him so much? I do like that of anything which is supposed to be like pagan times, they always have to call him the Christ God or like the Nazarene. Or like Christ Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, that would have been the one God. How sparse. How Spartan to have just the one God.
The one God with all the powers. So it's like no more Justice League, just Superman.
Yeah, they're trying to consolidate all your religion into one guy. Streamline. It was the original bit of streamlining technology.
Yeah, they just go, "Look, you're going to have a big debate about who to dedicate the temple to. Just put it all in a one guy."
It was the cloud, basically,
yeah.
for the Anglo-Saxon period. Yeah. Just put it all in the cloud. Just don't save it on thumb disks and worship hard drives. Just put it all in one cloud.
Well, that's why I was just thinking about in the end, you still have to have like the Trinity, right? You still have to have three. But that's three in one, Phil. And that is why the symbol of St. Patrick is the shamrock, is the clover.
Ah,
because he convinced a pagan Irish king of how the Trinity. He was like, "Well, how can you have three in one?" And he showed him a clover where there were three leaves on one stalk, and he was saying, you know, like this, basically.
Oh, I see. That's a very Irish story. That's, I mean, the most Irish story I've ever heard. And then they drank a glass of Guinness to celebrate.
Yeah, and this king basically went, "Oh, right, we're all Christian then. Done. Done deal. What's next? Next on the agenda, please."
People were like quite up for becoming Christian back then.
They were a lot keener than they are now, I'd say.
For sure.
How the hell? What would you?
St. Patrick was English, which I didn't realize. He was Romano-English.
Romano-British. So he was probably
Romano-British.
Probably a Romanized Briton. So a sort of a cosmopolitan Welshman, kind of.
Yes.
But don't tell America that. They say, because the Americans often pronounce their T's as D's, they often write St. Patrick's Day as St. Patty's Day, as in a patty of beef. And that has always really irritated me. Patty.
St. Patty's Day.
Yeah, but because then Paddy and Paddy are just the same sound, you know?
Yeah.
Sort it out. If any Americans listening, tell your fellow countrymen to stop with the whole Patty's Day thing.
Just cut it out.
Cut it out. Okay. Cut it out. This is an educational podcast now about the early medieval period. So get on board. Get on board. Shall we do some correspondence, Phil? The Frankish trader might have got in touch.
He might have. Although I have we listened to your New Year's resolution yet? I feel like we've just done mine.
That's true. That's true, actually. To be honest, my New Year's resolution is sort of the same as my goals were before. It just sort of generally keep trying to reduce my sheer girth. That's a big goal of mine. A reason that where I was empathizing with your need for focus, Phil, is that I'm going to be releasing my special soon, my special that we recorded in early September. It's taken a little while, but it's a coming, and I'm just trying to cut out little clips, trailers, things like that. So that's something I need to focus on, and it's anyone listening who's ever had to listen to their own voice will know that that's bad enough, but why not try listening to your own voice and watching your own jokes?
Oh, again and again and again.
Oh.
And looking at your own face.
Oh. And noticing the many, many things you did wrong, both orally and visually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been my private hell for the last couple of days / this morning. So keep an eye out, Podbuds, and when the time comes, I expect you to share that special as widely as a Frankish trader spreads the word of Christ with his big old Frankish peen. reduce the girth, increase the work rate, Phil. Survive. Just generally survive.
Survive another bloody year.
Another bloody year, mate. Yes, that's pretty much it, really. Just try and get something done, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it would be lovely to get something done.
Imagine getting something absolutely finished.
Brilliant. That'd be so nice. Just, what would you do afterwards? I don't even know.
I would think I would just ascend.
You just float up into the sky like... Like Jerry Seinfeld meditating.
Just that's right, like him. Like Jerry when he's on one of his trips. I would just whoop, I would just fly into the sky. Oh, fucking hell. All right, well, there is something that we can do, Phil, and that is read some emails.
Yes, please.
Let's find them.
Ring letters, emails, phone calls, correspondence.
Let's find
some New Year's correspondence. Mm-hmm. The first correspondence of 2022.
That is right. That is right. And it's from Sylvie, old school.
Sylvie, I like Sylvie.
Sylvie.
Sylvie, kill me! That's all I could think of. Sylvie, please kill me!
Mm. So Sylvie says, "Dear Pudbods, that's good."
Pudbods, because of our girth.
Our bodies are like pudding, Phil.
Yeah, Pudbods. I like Pudbods.
Too much pudding.
Yeah, and very Christmassy. I like it.
Yes. Dear Pudbods, please see the attached photo of my hospital canteen egg and cress sandwich packaging. Is Grandma Caveman at it again? I only hope I ate it hard enough. Yours heartburnerly, Sylvie.
Oh, I mean, a hospital cafeteria's packaging is ground zero for Grandma Caveman.
Yeah.
It's like classic hospital canteen, like cheap motel.
Yeah.
Student bar, maybe? Must have a lot of Grandma Caveman.
Well, so this egg and cress sandwich is called... there's a lot going on. It's a busy package, but not so busy that it would cost too much to make. That would be mad.
Yeah.
So, sideways on the package at one point, it just says, ready, set, eat. which is interesting. I don't know if, by the way, if at any point any of this is supposed to be like the name of the brand or a motto, or if it's just
they've
just spaffed it onto the packaging.
They're just trying to throw on as many words as possible to make their packaging like appropriate and relevant to as many eating settings as they can. So presumably ready, set, eat is if they ever want to cater like a sandwich eating competition in Texas.
Yes, or the Olympics.
They've got ready, set, eat on there. Or the Olympics. I've been petitioning for the event to be added to the Olympics for years now. I think I'm getting there.
Well, it's in the Commonwealth Games, so that's a good step.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. That's a promising development for sure.
Ready, set, eat. And then it says, in big letters, it just says, slice of life. And then sideways next to that, it just says, love at first bite.
Slice of life, love at first bite, ready, set, eat. What, are they in different fonts?
Yes, they are, Phil. Yes, they are.
Different colors?
It's all in a variation between, I would say, forest green and lime green.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. Lovely, clashy stuff.
Clashy stuff. Slice of life is in a sort of cowboy sign font. The rest is
you don't see
standard.
Too many of those.
Yeah, sort of
the Comic Sans of the Wild West.
That's right. Whenever a cowboy would see a sign written in that font, he'd go, "Oh, come on now!" He'd say, "Tarnation!" He'd be furious. He'd go, "What are you, basic bitch?" And he'd he'd shoot the sign painter. And then the thing that Sylvie was referring to then underneath says, "Play hard, comma." Eat harder.
Wow. Okay.
I mean...
Yeah. I mean, it's all very pro-eating, isn't it? It's all very pro... It's all very much eat whatever is in this.
Look, I don't want to pretend to you, Phil, that it's some sort of coincidence that this sandwich company is pretty pro-eating.
Yeah. Oh, they're in the pocket of Big Eat. Yeah.
Something tells me they might not quite be neutral on this matter. Play hard.
Might there be a vested interest in them promoting an eating lifestyle? Oh, I think there might be.
Yeah. And if I was to eat, I wonder what they'd like me to eat. Methinks the sandwich in this package.
It reminds me also of those, you know, those pizza boxes or like chicken boxes you get from a chicken shop where. They've got boxes, but they're not successful enough to have their own brand boxes yet.
Yeah, some mysterious.
It's just boxes that just says "tasty hot chicken," or like your favorite pizza, just written on the front, and there's like a clip art Italian chef on it.
Yes, exactly, from some mysterious central box depot.
Yeah,
that caters to everyone.
Your favorite? What pizza company? What pizza brand is this? Why, it's your favorite pizza brand, of course. What do you mean? What more do you need to know? This like, is your favorite pizza.
Like someone trying to trick someone. And which pizza is this you're feeding me? It's your favorite. Right, but which one? The one you prefer, of course. Just open it. Open the box. Play hard, eat harder, Phil. I don't know how you eat harder. I don't know how you eat hard, much less how you eat even harder than that.
Just with really big bites, like... biting down really hard, yeah.
Yeah, with rage. With fury. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. In talking of... Just you reminded me with the whole thing of, like, your favorite like, wonderful chicken. Funniest takeaway name. I laugh every time I walk past on the way to the gig in Bristol... at the Hen and Chicken, shout out to that gig. It's an excellent gig if you live in Bristol. There's a Chinese takeaway on the road from the station to that gig. And the Chinese takeaway is just called Red Hot Goodies. It's nothing even Chinese about the name. It's just Red Hot Goodies.
I like that. I like that. No Golden Dragon Mm-mm. or Lotus Palace here.
No.
Red Hot Goodies.
Too hot.
They want to assimilate.
Yeah.
they want to become British.
Exactly.
This is why this isn't Chinese food. These are Red Hot Goodies.
These are just goodies. They could be from anywhere. They're just goodies.
From the Red Hot Army.
They're red hot. Oh, we've got an email from Ricky from Seattle.
Wow! Ricky from Seattle.
Ricky from Seattle.
I hear the blues are calling, toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Yes.
Frasier was in Seattle.
Yes, it was.
That's all I know about Seattle. And it's also where Starbucks is from. That's all I know about Seattle.
Starbucks, Frasier, the rain, rains a lot.
The rain?
It rains a lot.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the Seattle Sounders.
Is that a basketball team?
It's a sports team. Don't remember what sport. Because I'm cool.
Go Sounders.
Go Sounders.
Go Sounders.
So Ricky says, hi, Pill Hip and Pee Hair. Interesting.
Pill Hip and Pee Hair. Pill Hip. Must be a Seattle thing.
My neighbor now thinks that I'm deranged and it's entirely your fault.
Good. Good. We want people to come around because they're worried about you.
Yes. Let me explain, he says. That would be funny if it just ended there. Every morning, I go for a run around my neighborhood while listening to Bud Pod. Very healthy, very good.
Oh, we're being played on the streets of Seattle, Pierre. How exciting.
Yes, and he's American, so he's running in a gray jumper.
In a gray jumper, in a grid.
Yes.
He's running around the block.
Yes, everything is in down blocks. It's neat.
Grabbing a smart water at the bodega on the corner.
Ooh. Now we're talking.
Getting some diarrhea pills from the CVS.
Yes, the CVS, and being harassed by the police. You know,
saying that in a sort of a wowy kind of way is funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Being harassed by the police.
So he says, normally I'm out just after sunrise. Oof, and there is nobody around to hear my insane cackling.
Wow, what a go-getter Ricky is.
Ricky is hoping for that big promotion.
I'm always so impressed and heartened by people who listen to our podcast earlier in the day than either of us have ever been awake.
at times that you and I wouldn't recognize on a clock.
It's the only way you can actually hear our voices at that time of the day.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Today, however, early morning plans force me to run at lunchtime instead. This guy's got plans clashing with his early mornings.
But he still has time to run. If I had one plan in the day, I'd use that as an excuse not to run again.
Yeah. So he says, instead, the streets were filled with judgmental onlookers. Throughout the run, it took all my effort to keep from choking on stifled laughter. I had managed to pass off my massive grin as a general friendliness and optimism. It's funny. Just running like, with a big smile. That would work in America only, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Here, you're just increasing your chances of being stopped by the police.
Yeah, ironically, yeah. That'd be the one thing they'd stop you for. They say, hey, don't enjoy this as much, sir. And you'd go, sorry.
You're arousing suspicion being so happy.
It's public disorder. Have a pint, for goodness sake. So he's passing it off as general friendliness and optimism, and I was almost home. And then I heard barking. Like Phil, I do not like dogs, especially not loud ones.
That'll be Eddie from Frasier's flat.
Yeah. if I know my Seattle, and I think I do by now, that will be the dog.
That sounds like Eddie.
Especially not loud ones running at full speed towards me. I found myself running backwards, hands out, to defend against my attacker. Now facing the dog's unsympathetic owner, an old lady who I did not know, despite her just living a block away.
That's Seattle life for you, man. None of us know each other in Seattle. We're neighbors, but we're not a community.
At precisely this moment, Pierre's voice said something hilarious about Greek oracles. I do not know what that was. What an on-brand sentence in some ways.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the one where we were talking about oracles being like the VAR in refereeing.
Oh man, I don't remember anything.
It was the idea that you could use the oracle to see if it was a penalty or not, and you'd go to this like swirling naked girl in smoke, like in 300.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it. Sadly, or maybe fortunately, this was not the I Fucked a Dog episode. And distracted as I was by the ensuing attack, I broke into a howl of my own. My neighbor stared at me. So he's being a mid-dog attack, he's laughing.
Howling!
Like
a werewolf.
My neighbor stared at me with a look of utter confusion as I laughed my head off, all the while being pursued by a still-barking dog. So he's being chased around by a dog, just going, ah-ha-ha! Like, Phil, don't make me say it. Like who?
I was just about to say the Joker.
Oh, it's a trap, and we walk into it with our arms open, smiling every time. So once she had grudgingly recalled her dog, I stopped laughing long enough to apologize to the lady for what I do not know, and slowly run off up a steep hill and out of sight. I blame the whole incident on the quality of your podcast, and I have included some tat for your enjoyment from my recent stay in an Airbnb, which, by the way, are brimming with the stuff. Koji, Ricky from Seattle.
Thank you, Ricky from Seattle.
Thank you.
Yeah, Airbnbs are awash with tat.
They're
tat warehouses.
Zero. So, Phil, this piece of tat is called Recipe for Love.
Okay.
Recipe for Love. And then it's a list of the ingredients.
For love.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Recipe for Love. Ingredients.
A cup of listening. A dash of smile. And a sprinkling of fuck. Is that right?
That would be a more honest reflection, I think. If there was a fuck sprinkle.
What is it? What are they?
One cup of romance. One pinch of humor, Phil. Only a pinch.
Just a pinch. Don't take the piss. Don't take the fucking piss.
We've fucked this up, haven't we? I'd like to think that you and I both bring more than a pinch of humor. So maybe it's such an overwhelming flavor.
It's like a grab. Yeah. It's like a fondle of humor, at least.
2 spoonfuls of joy.
Okay. Yeah.
Can't have too much.
They haven't
joy.
Specified tea or table.
That's true.
Spoons.
Mm-hmm. That's a recipe for trouble. Too much joy.
It really is. Yeah.
One.
Because you can always add joy. You can't take it out.
That's
so just,
true.
Yes. Just be careful.
Yeah. Just add joy to taste. One pound of compatibility. That's a lot.
That's a lot of compatibility, but I guess, yeah, that's your starch. That's your rice, the compatibility. That's what you need the most of.
Yeah, that's true. They're acknowledging that with a whole pound.
It'll soak up the joy. It'll soak up the joy.
Yeah.
If you cook it for long enough.
Yeah. Now it gets specific. 3 tablespoons of trust.
3 tablespoons of trust. Okay, so we must assume the previous spoons were teaspoons then.
Teaspoons of joy. Just little teaspoons of it.
A lot more trust than joy then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hmm.
But trust does burn off. so that might be it.
That's
trust
true.
Does burn off with enough heat. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. 1 cup of respect.
Yeah, they're really mixing up the measurements here. But yeah, 1 cup of respect.
That's
a good amount of respect. That's like the amount of wine I'd put in a bolognese.
That's that's like a Rodney Dangerfield album, isn't it?
I don't get no cups of respect.
All I want is 1 cup of respect. And a pinch of humor. Half a pound of sharing.
half a pound of sharing. Okay, I guess you shared the pound with someone else by the sounds of it.
Yeah, so there's two recipes that maybe half a pound of sharing.
Mm.
One zest of tenderness.
Oof, this is getting ridiculous. So you don't want real tenderness, just a skin.
Yes. Also, it feels inappropriate to take something called tenderness and shave the skin off it. That seems insane. And then a three-quarter cup of patience.
A three-quarter cup of patience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hard to provide after you've already used up all of your patience reading through this stupid fucking sign.
And now you're going to have to wash out the respect from that cup first?
I mean, you better have a lot of cups. I don't know why Americans use cups for everything, as if there's one mega
cup. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. Reading an American recipe makes me want to cut my thumbs off.
Oh, and then, well, you know, you have to, you'd have to cut your thumb off to create a thumb-sized piece of thumb.
Really like that recipe.
It's a good recipe, Ricky.
It's a good recipe. It's classic. That's BBC Good Food recipe for love. It's just reliable. Nothing too exciting or out there, but it works.
It's also, I mean, I don't want to be a pedant about this, Phil, but it's not really a recipe, is it? It's just the ingredients. There's no direction.
It's just ingredients. You're right. It is two ingredients. Maybe it's like just a cocktail. Maybe it's just you pour it into a big bucket and you're done.
I wouldn't want to point out the lack of direction to the... I'm imagining that all tat is written onto signs by one very stressed, balding, older man with a paintbrush. Mm. And he's just working in a frenzy. And you'd just be saying, this is just the ingredients, there's no recipe. And he'd just be like, I don't know. Whisk it up with a whisk of love. I don't know. Just get it out.
I got 50 more of these to do today. Come on.
Just sell them for me. Just stick them on Airbnb. Go on there, post about it. I don't know. Where do you buy this stuff, actually? Garden centers?
Yeah. Garden centers and Pinterest.
Homeware stores? Places where you buy a big slow-cooking pot, perhaps?
Perhaps. Well, we need to go.
We do need to go. That I'm still... Zest of tenderness is... Ugh. That's really... I really didn't like that sign.
That's the most unpleasant.
I really didn't like it. It's it's kind of hurt my brain a bit. But we do need to go, Phil. We need to go because in order to fulfill our New Year's resolution, it's time to go to the members-only gymnasium of the Patreon.
Yep, that's right. So get yourself a membership and join us, won't you, to build a better you for 2022.
Yeah. See you in the steam room.
See you there. Have a cold shower first, though.
Yeah, please do.
All right. See you in the bonus pod.
See you in the bonus pod, guys.
Or next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.